Okay, welcome back. And if you want to see some black comedy, black humor, just read those headlines every day. It gets, it just gets to a point where you kind of scratch your head. What's going to happen next? And I guess the only answer to that is anything you can think of, and a lot that you can't. This stuff just, you can't make it up. It's crazy. I looked at this story about the dam in Michigan that failed. The feds apparently spent 20 years warning the federal government and all the administrations of the danger before that dam failed. Fortunately, there wasn't a big loss of life, but listen, our dams are failing. The overpasses on the freeways and highways are worn out. They're failing. The whole infrastructure, which Trump swore on a stack of whatever magazines he happens to like, we were going to do something about it. The infrastructure. No, none of that stuff. Never happened. Never will. Let's see, what else do we have here? Some say a national quarantine is constitutional. That, I read the story, that appears to be open and would be decided by the courts, which who knows if that's good or bad anymore. A national quarantine. We do know now that the lockdown, shutdown, has been catastrophic. I don't think anybody really understands how much damage has been done. It's going to take years and years and years to crawl back up on 2 feet, and then we'll only have one leg, a bigger leg, a stronger leg, of much fewer controllers. That's the way it's going to work out. So take a look at those headlines, and do keep up to date. It's the best you can do. If anybody asks you a question, you'll have something to offer them. And an old trick, if you find a video that you really like, and I hope you'll take a look, look on the right-hand side if you're talking about this coronavirus. There's some real good ones down there. The Rockefeller Report, these are black and white papers. There's a video about that. And you've got a friend who just doesn't seem to want to get involved with any of this, but you know they're smart. One way to kind of trick them into looking at this, even though they don't have to agree, just get them to look and say, hey, I found this video and it just really bothers me. I can't figure it out. Would you look at this for me? Tell me what you think. It's only 8 minutes. Just tell me what you think. Most people, they're flattered to have their position on something sought out, and they'll do it. So you can at least kind of share information with people who don't want to look that way. It actually works. All right, there's enough of that stuff. It's Friday, end of another week of special reports, our third hour each night with Dr. Henry Nyman, Ph.D., on this virus and what's going on. Been another interesting week. I don't think we could top Trump's statement yesterday about how he tested. What did he say? I got to find that. Maybe I'll play that again. He tested it. It leaned in the direction of being negative, positive, something like that. Wasn't that what it was? Here it is.
It leaned in the direction of negative.
That's what it was.
Put it in a good way.
Oh, don't forget that part. I tested positively toward the negative. Here, take a listen to this. It's too funny. A scriptwriter would have trouble making this up. Although I'm sure that some of them could. As soon as this loads, we'll play it. Donald's hair is drastically thinning. He's gone to actually getting some gray now. He's showing some gray at his temples. I guess maybe he's crooning a new image for us all. But his top of his hair, there's just not much there anymore. And this happened just since he began taking hydroxychloroquine. All right. This is not quite loaded up. By the way, the latest on, what was it? I guess it was remdesivir. Henry?
Yeah, there was an update in New England Journal, but I think it might have been the same result that had been kind of previewed a little while ago. It was kind of the same numbers, with there being a shorter time in the hospital for treatment with that. The bigger story that came out today was really on hydroxychloroquine and Lancet. And that should have been the death blow. I don't know. But, you know, it was on both hydroxychloroquine, chloroquine, with or without the antibiotic. Mm-hmm. And it was a very large study. It was almost 100,000 patients.
When the Lancet put something out, people should pay damn close attention, and they did. Here's this little clip of Donald, then we'll jump into this. And it is the remdesivir study was out today, which I'm sure you saw as well. But I just got to play this. We've got to laugh at some of this stuff, and this is a real classic piece. Okay.
I think it's another day. I had a 2-week regimen of hydroxychloroquine, and I've taken it. I think just about 2 weeks. I think it's another day. So, and I'm still here. I'm still here. And I tested very positively in another sense. So this morning, yeah, I tested positively toward negative, right? So, no, I tested perfectly this morning.
Another perfect mark for Donald Trump. Self-bestowed. Yeah. Perfectly. No matter what he does,
it's perfect. He could have written a letter on it and signed it. Yeah,
Yes. An executive order.
He didn't have to read the results. He could have handed it out and said, "You know, another perfect 10."
Yeah.
Anyway.
All right. Go ahead. Let's talk about hydroxy first. The Lancet. This is a big story. They say that hydroxy increases the risk of death in coronavirus patients. Period. That's what they said. Doubled it.
Right. Well, it wasn't just the risk of death. It was a 411% increase for the risk of serious heart arrhythmias. So it was, even for the ones that didn't die, they overwhelmed the staff trying to keep them alive. So it was pretty devastating because it was in almost 100,000 patients. So this wasn't a small study. This was on six different continents. I mean, this was everybody got a shot at this, and they proved pretty conclusively that it not only didn't help, that it hurt. And it actually is putting – there is a clinical trial that is scheduled, and it's probably in jeopardy now because with the data this bad, it's hard to ethically conduct a trial where you're actually giving this drug, right? So it was 411% increase when they used the combo that Trump liked the most with hydroxychloroquine with the antibiotic. And they did chloroquine also with and without the antibiotic. And wherever chloroquine or hydrochloroquine was used, it really did worse than those that didn't get either. And like I said, it came out in the Lancet, and there were follow-ups in the papers, 96,000 patients. And it was pretty dramatic on six different continents. And it might have been a game changer, but not the way Trump wanted it to be. So it was classical, science versus whatever you want to call it Trump does, but it's certainly not science. And so he's playing doctor and saying that what he got to lose, yesterday he said, "I'm still standing. I didn't have anything going in. I took it for 2 weeks, and I'm still here." Although
I'm still here.
He's losing his hair.
You see it too, don't you?
And it sounds like It sounds like he may be getting some mood changes and irritability thrown in there. He sounds terrible when he tries to do the press conferences. Oh, today he just read his lines and left. So he wouldn't take a single question today. And he played King Donald and said, yeah, he read his proclamation that if the governors didn't open all the churches, he would. And, you know, they could call him, but it's not going to do him any good. And I'm sure a lot of them are calling him, but I don't think it's on the phone. And I can only imagine what they're calling him.
Yeah. So who was at the press conference if Donald walked off? Who did Pence take over?
Oh no, Pence
Kushner?
Is toxic. Pence is nowhere to be seen. You know,
Pence is fighting CV, as far as I can tell.
Right. He's not allowed in the building. He's got his own building. He goes to. He's not supposed to be around Donald at all. Deborah was there to present a little bit of data and his press person was there to answer questions or not answer and say, oh, that's a hypothetical. And when she was asked, by what authority does he have to override the governors? And she said, we'll worry about
she
that.
She called it hypothetical?
That was a hypothetical question, right? So she wouldn't answer that. And then another reporter said, it seems that there's a concern about safety. Can you address the safety aspect of it? No, she wasn't going to do that either. And Deborah was basically there presenting the New York, tri-state area, on how that was declining, and a few other areas like Washington, D.C. and Chicago, and there's one other one, where they were increasing. They were concerned about those. And that was about all she had to say. She didn't really take too many questions either. But Donald literally came in and read his statement and left. He did not take a single question. He looked like he had his tail between his legs. He just did not want to talk about this. He wanted to kind of issue his proclamation and said, there you go. You have to do it this weekend. The entire country. And
but he doesn't, unfortunately, have the authority. No.
He doesn't have he doesn't have the authority. And B, he doesn't have a rationalization. I mean, the ones that are closed because they're in an area where there's a lot of virus. Houses of worship are just difficult because, by definition, they're crowded. There've been a few examples of, they say, well, we're going to be careful. We're going to hand out masks. And then there's kind of peer pressure. So nobody wears the mask. And then they do a lot of singing, which, causes air to be forcibly exhaled. And, it's just not an ideal, environment in-person services.
Mentioned this. I've mentioned this, that a normal, let's just say a relatively vigorous exhalation, like, will literally move the air up to 17 feet away, unless there's a big wind blowing.
Or you can knock down the distance if you have a mask, if they don't wear a mask.
Not singing.
I mean, that's what the problem is. I mean, Trump is just he gets bad marks no matter how you want to look at it, but he's a bad role model. He goes and he creates a division. he doesn't manage. He's inconsistent. He doesn't know what science is. He disregards the scientific advice. He tries to censor the scientific advice. He tries
like any good king would do. It doesn't exist.
He fires, you know, people that are kind of truth to power. They tell him, here's what the deal is. And he says, well, that's your opinion. You must hate Trump.
It used to be off with their head, remember?
See you later. Yeah, well, most of these are government workers. I mean, he just reassigns them. So it's off with their head if they're head of a division, but not literally. You know, or at least not yet. I don't know, you know, what his plans are as things go downhill. But I mean, that was kind of the bookend. The morning started out with the report out of Lancet, and the evening or late afternoon ended with his proclamation on houses of worship being essential. And you know, it's like the whole idea is A, you know, things are easing up when the virus level at least theoretically is starting to go down. And then, you know, different types of crowds are, you know, get different types of treatment just to try to minimize the, I mean, it's for protection. It's for protection of those participating, and it's for protection of the community in general. And the houses of worship were kind of singled out. As you know, the CDC had guidance and, for, you know, reopening a whole bunch of, you know, situations, you know, schools, daycare, workplaces, and houses of worship. And they had a whole list, and it was supposed to have been released several weeks ago, you know, so that those that are opening up would have guidance on, you know, what do they need to do to keep the virus under control. And that's kind of CDC's specialty. I mean, they're kind of a world leader on, I mean, it's, you know, it's for communicable diseases, control and protection. And so they specialize in protection and giving out directives and, you know, very, you know, flow charts and specifics on what do you need to do to control the infectious disease. And they, you know, these directives have been clearly watered down, and that's been going on for, you know, a couple of months now. And CDC usually writes it in, you know, you should do this, you should do that, you should do, and kind of lists what you should do. And then now they say, well, you might consider doing this, and you might consider doing this, that. And it's just put out as, here's a suggestion here, and here's a suggestion there. Pick and choose whatever you want to do is fine with us. And good luck. And it's just not what they do, and it's clear that, you know, it's heavy involvement by Trump and associates, and it's clear. I mean, the clearest one came when they were talking about ships, and it went that it started out by saying how Trump had put a ban on China. And that had made a tremendous difference. And, you know, under the leadership of President Trump, and it was, you don't see that in CDC documents that are, you know, press release. This is a press release. I mean, the press releases are pretty much, you know, the facts and just the facts, not these, you know, hail to the chief or the guy or whatever you want to call it. You know, but in any event, in this case, he was really talking about the churches, or not just churches. He said churches, synagogues, and mosques. So it's just houses of worship. And it wasn't, you know, if it was safety, you know, there was nothing about safety. There was nothing about controlling the virus. There was nothing about the virus. It was
basically a denial of everything that's going on. He's talking about things as if they were completely normal.
Well, his comparison was that if abortion clinics and I don't recall what the other one. There were two examples. If they can be considered to be essential businesses,
liquor stores.
Then liquor stores and abortion clinics can certainly. Houses of worship should be declared essential businesses.
There's an argument to be made there.
There really isn't, because they're totally different situations. The houses of worship are more difficult because...
Oh, the congregations, of course.
Right. It's designed to be a crowd, you know, and they're there.
They're socializing, yes.
Right. And so they're more likely to have hugs and, oh, I haven't seen you in a while, and da-da-da-da-da. And then they're, you know, like I said, there were a few examples that were given on some that were actually doing it ahead of schedule, and they said, well, we're going to do it responsibly, and it's going to have only X number of people, and we're going to give out masks. And they did have masks, but nobody wore them. they either declined to take them, or they just kept them in their pocket or wherever it was. And
did you see the picture of Trump in a mask at the Ford plant? Somebody got a photo of him. I put it up. Yeah.
Yeah. Apparently, it was an employee, and. And they had insisted that he wear the mask, and they said they weren't going to go out with him if he didn't have the mask. And so he put the mask on, and as soon as they turned the corner, he took it off once they had already gone out. But an employee behind the curtain, so to speak, took a picture before he got a chance to take it off. Well, I mean, that is the policy of the plant, and it was, and I'm sure he assumed it would be a valuable picture, you know, regardless of, he was an employee, so I don't know.
Probably
they
made
didn't
some
really
money,
identify who it was, but,
I read it was a member of the press, but I don't know for sure. Here's another one. Yeah. Oh, hold on. I don't want to get bogged down in Trump's mask. There's another story, and this is the second time I've seen it now. There's doctors in Bangladesh. We did mention the one, I still can't pronounce it, the one that's in Brazil going through some kind of trials, Galidesivir. I sent you that yesterday. But these Bangladeshi doctors claiming that a dog and cat dewormer called ivermectin, when it's used in conjunction with doxycycline, is yielding, apparently, what they're saying in this particular story, 100% positive results with seriously ill coronavirus patients. Now, it's not the first story like this we've seen, but this ivermectin and doxycycline is back. So, for whatever it's worth, there it is.
Yeah, I don't know. Doxycycline is kind of, I would think it would have less specificity than remdesivir, but they're both conceptually the same type of thing. They're nucleoside analogs, and the demresivir should be more specific for RNA, and these are RNA single-stranded RNA viruses, so that attaching RNA as opposed to DNA would have more specificity for the virus. Deoxy is really for DNA, and so it would have potential side effects on just about anything. Cells that divide quickly, they incorporate this, and it kills the cell. So that has a tendency to, over time, kind of knock out the patient's immune system, because white blood cells that divide quickly end up getting knocked out. And so over time,
it
destroys the immune system.
Another winner.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's... so I don't know. Yeah, I mean, like I said, there are a lot of clinical trials out there, and the anecdotal ones don't necessarily hold up. I mean, the Trump's favorite is a is a good example of that. That there was a fair amount of talk about it, but. And when you do 96,000 patients and you get fairly uniform results that are all indicating that the ones that got the drug died at a higher rate than the ones that didn't, that's hard to see how that's going to come out with a positive result. But that, you know, I had mentioned this earlier. What was surprising about that was in the House testimony that, I call them the Fifth Avenue drug dealers, the guys that were willing to, you know, bring up questions on how good this drug is. And they did this after, you know, there was a fair amount of data out there that it really wasn't performing that well. I mean, the study right. With the VA had already been completed, and several hospitals had stopped using hydroxychloroquine because of the arrhythmias that they were seeing at a, mm-hmm. at a very high
yeah,
frequency.
Yeah, I read that too. Yeah,
and
yeah.
And it was also known that, you know, in New York, they used it on quite a few patients. I mean, it was heavily used in New York, and New York, you know, was not known for how many patients were coming off respirators. They were really known for how many patients were dying on respirators, and they certainly had a very high fatality rate. And so there wasn't really outside indication at all. They've started to use this, and you know, there doesn't seem to be as many deaths. It was exactly the opposite, that they were running out of room for the bodies, even though they had all these trailers lined up and had the bodies stacked inside. So in any event, the kind of anti-science, where, oh, I heard this worked, and, you know, da-da-da-da-da, without any real, you know, clinical trial.
It's the age of anecdotal science. Got it.
Right. But these guys, after it had come out, that it really didn't seem to be working that well when they put it in, you know, against real patients that were in need of a game changer, so to speak, and there was really no evidence that it was really changing any games other than, you know, anecdotal comments. So it went from the drug to the thing with the houses of worship, and that was the same thing where, you know, CDC has got their specifications, and these are the areas that have to be addressed. And Trump didn't really care about the safety at all. He just said it's got to be an essential business or occupation or event, whatever you want to call it, and that had to be implemented this weekend across the country without exceptions.
Well, that's a king's decree,
and
right.
And he would override, you know, any resistance. Well, and
states' rights.
And really, it really was a decree. And, you know, his press person couldn't really answer the question as, you know, under what authority. And that was just a hypothetical. But that is literally all that he said. I mean, mm-hmm. he came out there and mm-hmm. read his decree. And then turned around and left. and took zero questions and didn't say anything other than just reading the script. And it was, you know, it was maybe 2 minutes or something. I mean, it was one of his shortest press conferences. And everybody else was on stage to answer, you know, subsequent questions.
Shortest and most successful. Okay.
But he was gone for that.
So, that was his campaign appearance. So he made it and left. Okay.
Yeah, it was really his proclamation. You know, but yeah, I mean, it was part of his campaign pitch. And
stay visible, Donald. Stay visible.
Yeah. Yeah. And well, say what you think your voters are going to want to hear. But the problem is that, on the voter side, he seems to be losing the over 65 group because they don't want to be his soldiers. He's basically saying, oh, you know, take one for the economy. And they don't want to be, you know, the guinea pigs, and taking one for the economy isn't really going to do anything. I mean, that's the flaw in the logic. The flaw is that if you hurry up and get everybody going back to work, that the economy is going to pick up, and it's going to be exactly the opposite, because if you hurry up and get people back to work, they're going to get infected at work and they're not going to be going out and spending money. They're going to say, oh, it doesn't look good. And, uh-huh. I guess there is going to be a wave and maybe there won't be a second wave in the fall. In the fall, we'll still be dealing with the first wave because we're kind of reinforcing it and kind of giving the virus oxygen. And that's essentially what appears to be happening, that there are reports now that it's not just the food processors. It's not just the beef and the pork and the poultry. Mm-hmm. But it seems to be other industries where people are, you know, in close quarters. There seems to be an outbreak at a postal service facility that serves two states. I think it was maybe Colorado. They were in the Midwest to the West, in Colorado and Arizona or something. I mean, it was a large postal facility, and they had an outbreak. You know, I think they had 70 or 100 positive cases, and that is probably a sign of things to come. And unfortunately, this rush back to work with a lot of virus around, and not really enough, you know, people to do the contact tracing and hunt this down and control this, is just going to lead. It's not going to open up the economy and get the economy rolling again. It's going to make people realize that it's really not safe to go back to work. And there's no real plan here. This is just, you know, another proclamation that, well, election's coming up and economy's going down, and so we gotta get a move on here and forget about the virus and just get back to work and start spending money. And that's not gonna happen. You know, it's gonna be, people are gonna spend money when they either the virus is going away and they don't really have to worry about that.
In the states that have opened up, Georgia, I guess, would be the first one that comes to mind. Gyms and restaurants are just not seeing much traffic. People are, they've been cowed by this.
Because it's a risk-reward type of a thing. They've kind of lived without the restaurant for the last, you know, month or two. And it's kind of, well, is it really worth the risk to go to the restaurant and worry about, you know, why is that person coughing or guy's getting a little bit too close? And, I thought they were supposed to wear masks. And what's that guy doing? And,
it's going to take a long time. No doubt.
Yeah.
No doubt.
And that's also part of Trump's modeling. I mean, it goes from location to location. I mean, around here, you can't really enter any of these stores without a mask. I mean, there's signs up and, you know, they won't let you in. You know, it's pretty universal. But I've seen pictures of other locations that it looks like at least people walking around aren't wearing a mask. And he just sets this example. Well, you know, I don't want to do it. So, you know, it's not mandatory. You don't really have to do it. And then in some stores where it is mandatory, people are getting killed. I mean, it's just bad on so many different levels. And there's no real direction. You know, oh, well, it's going to be up to the states, except when I issue my proclamation and you know, houses of worship have to be open this weekend. They didn't say, you know, that are in such and such an area or...
Well, we're going to see how the state governors respond. This will be interesting.
Yeah, they're going to just ignore it. I mean, they're going to do it their own... I mean, some are drawing up plans anyway, and the CDC did come out with their guidance, you know, after he issued that. So this afternoon, they did come out with
guidance for churches.
Right.
Uh-huh. Church in Mississippi tried to open up, and it was burned to the ground. I don't know if you saw that one or not.
Yeah, I saw that.
The locals didn't like it.
Yeah, so. It's hard to say who. I don't think they identified.
Hard to say who.
Who was responsible. But that's why I just see more and more problems showing up. Because, I mean, the numbers today, it's depends on which one you're using. It's just about at 98,000. So it should hit 100,000 fatalities over the... over the holiday weekend. Some of these are a couple thousand behind that, so they might not hit until, you know, Tuesday or Wednesday or so. But they're very close. They got 96.5 or so. That's an extra day or so, by that count. But it's gonna hit 100,000 and, it's not really slowing down. The deaths are a little bit lower, but the deaths are a lagging indicator. So the lower deaths are really a reflection of the larger metropolitan areas in New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut. They're showing some fairly significant declines, and the deaths associated with those three areas is down. And as a result, the deaths for the country is down, but the deaths in the areas outside of that metropolitan areas really isn't. I mean, a couple other big ones are declined somewhat. The New Orleans area has also declined, and but the Chicago area is staying up high, and Massachusetts still high. And now other areas like Maryland and Virginia are clearly on the rise. And Florida is starting to move up on the number of deaths. They're reporting 50, 60 deaths every day now. And so the Midwest is also starting to show these areas. The numbers aren't that high, but the frequency you know, the number of cases over what it's been has definitely started to move, and these are more from these processing plants. And so there's still a lot of virus out there. There's not a real indication of a seasonal effect. And to see the seasonal effect, if there is one, it would require controls to be on a little bit longer, because now you're kind of lifting those controls, and invariably the numbers are going to start going up. It's just a matter of how dramatically they're going to go up, because there's just going to be a whole lot of additional opportunities for the virus to spread. So it's still not a very good situation from that standpoint. And then it's not a good situation from Trump is a role model that he thinks he can do whatever he wants, and the rules aren't designed for him, and he's encouraging those that want to resist the lockdown.
Well, he told the Michigan people, go get them. Good.
Right. And so that's going to have them feel that, well, we don't really have to. So even if they change the requirements to start opening things up, they're going to say, well, we can kind of, the virus is gone, we're going to spend more time outside, and we really don't have to worry. We can just kind of do what we want. And social distancing is a thing of the past, and it's not. There's way too much virus around. Many of these states weren't showing any decline when they decided to lift things up. So the level of the virus is out there is still up. And you can see in other countries, Brazil has passed Russia now. Brazil is now number two.
Oh, and, I didn't see that.
They're going to get totally out of control because of the Bolsonaro or whatever. He's saying, nothing for me to do. It's the virus. It's going to go and do what it's going to do. I guess he's starting to say, well, we can try hydroxychloroquine. So he's going to try a drug that's got very little scientific evidence that it does anything other than kill people.
I wonder if his press secretary is back on the job. Remember when they all went to Mar-a-Lago?
No.
Bolsonaro's press secretary was infected when they were at Mar-a-Lago.
Oh, I'm not sure. No, what's going on? But what the current status is, I'm not sure. I know he's pretty much hands off. And essentially saying, the virus is going to do what it wants to do. The physicians in Brazil are not really thrilled. I think they've got some shortages of PPEs, but they've got no control. And so it's, Russia's out of control. And Brazil is more out of control. So Brazil is now number two. Russia's number three. And the UK will probably be number, some have UK already number four, but others have Spain thrown in there. But UK is adding cases at a much higher rate than Spain is now. So UK will be number four on all of them. And that's just another example of where, if you don't do the contact tracing and you don't do any serious social distancing, the virus is just going to expand like wildfire. And so that's what's happening in Brazil now. And it's probably going to spill over and kind of engulf South America, I would imagine. And Putin's not doing very well with the virus in Russia, and Boris Johnson's not doing very well with the virus in the UK. And so between those three plus the US, I don't know, they account for, two-thirds of all the cases or three-quarters of all the cases. I don't know, a very high percentage of the cases are just in those four countries now. and they all kind of have leaders that have, you know, very similar approaches, and they're not really addressing the virus very seriously, and that's what it's doing. Even though, you know, the U.S., even though all but Brazil are in the northern hemisphere, and so you got two different seasons going on, and it doesn't really seem to make much difference. And that's what the concern is. The concern is that this is a new virus, and it's kind of entered the population. There are all these asymptomatic people who really have a fair amount of virus, but they're not really getting sick, and therefore they're walking around with the virus. They don't even know they have the virus. They've got high levels of the virus, so they're spreading the virus. And they're probably not going to even create that large of an immune response, and they're probably susceptible to being infected by the virus again. So it's not like, well, everybody gets through the virus once, and they'll all have immunity, and there'll be herd immunity, and the virus will get under control. I mean, I've seen some data that suggests that that's not happening.
I have, too. Here's another one on the vaccine front. We only have about 3 minutes. Let me do this real quick. The U.S. is planning a massive testing effort that will involve more than 100,000 volunteers and six of the most promising COVID-19 vaccines. This is picked up and spread around by Reuters this afternoon. The scientist in charge said the effort would hopefully narrow down vaccine candidates to one by the end of the year. I wonder how many of the volunteers are going to be narrowed down. The push to fast-track a vaccine is condensing at least 10 years of vaccine development and testing into a matter of months. So they're going to take 100,000 people who are volunteering to take six of the most promising vaccines. I still think the approach ought to be to find something like a cyclovir that suppresses this particular virus in an allopathic sense and not a vaccine sense. It'll be an easier sell, a quicker potential fix. Let's just say that ivermectin and doxycycline together did something. I'm not saying they do, but something like that. They're trying everything they can think of, believe it. So if something pops up...
Well, they're doing both. They're not really mutually exclusive because...
No, they're not.
Yeah,
no.
There's going to be a fair number of cases until the vaccine takes effect, and there's no guarantees that it's going to be...
Right.
You know, the effectiveness of the vaccine is not at all known. And if any, you know, there have been attempts to make vaccines against SARS and MERS, and they haven't really resulted in a useful vaccine. So it's not like there's one that exists and all you got to do is change the sequence and do the same thing and expect the same results. And so the vaccines, it's not clear that they'll be the be-all and end-all. They might just be another step, and it'll be somewhat like the flu, where you basically need to get a new vaccine, you know, each season or whatever, because the virus is going to change. I mean, the coronavirus has evolved fairly quickly, as long as they got a reason to. I mean, right now they don't have there's not a whole lot of selection pressure. If you get a little bit of herd immunity or a vaccine or both, then, you know, that'll be a reason for the virus to change and get away from that vaccine. And, it changes very dramatically. I mean, that's been seen in MERS, which has been around for a while, that it does a lot of insertions and deletions, and there's a lot of recombination that goes on. And once there's a reason where some of the virus can't really grow that well, a variant will emerge and that'll become dominant. So the the whole vaccine side is going to be an issue. And then as far as the drugs are concerned, you know, it might be like HIV where you need, you know, multiple drugs. So you're going to need several of them with different targets.
That's
and
right.
Chip away at the virus that way. And it just takes a little while. I mean, there are quite a few that are in trial, so that if a combination can be identified, that could happen fairly quickly. But we'll see how easy it is to do this and how specific these combinations are. But it does seem that the virus, probably because that polybasic phenotype, can go to a lot of different cell types and can kind of hide away in some of them, I would think, and not even present itself till after the effect, and the after the effect is due to, you know, the immune system kind of trying to get the virus under control because it,
right,
it creates so many different problems.
All right. Well,
so,
it'll be interesting to see. Holiday weekend, a lot of people will be out, and we'll see maybe by the end of next weekend, what happened.
We'll find out. I think it'll take a little bit more than a week, but I think we will find out. It might be 2 or 3 weeks, but I suspect that the holiday weekend will produce a measurable effect in 2 or 3 weeks down the road.
All right.
Yep.
Okay.
Okay.
Anyway,
well,
have a good weekend.
Holiday.
Thank you. Same to you.
See you next week. Okay.
All right. Good night. Okay, all of you out there, wishing you the best for a good weekend. I hope you do get outside and enjoy it. And I hope the weather is nice for you. Have fun. Thanks for being here. And we'll be with you at Rents.com, of course, all the time. So you can depend on that for the latest. Talk soon. Be well and take care.